when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, good afternoon, all you people out there listening to us in Radio Land. We have one heck of a show tonight. We have our great guest. She's a world-class guest. Her name is Monica Schaefer. She's going to be on with us in just a minute or so. I've just got a very short announcement to make. Me and Lee Cochran, my loyal co-host, he's in the studio with me tonight. Matt may or may not be with us because he's having to work on his house before he goes back to work. But listen, we're going to move up or back. I can never remember which. Our trip to Forest City. We found out the cabins will not be open until June. Lee Cochran and I, we're going to make a trip over to Forest City next week to scout the place out, and we're going to try to get the place rented and get some cabins rented and get a nice patio rented. And with that, we're going to talk. I'm going to go to Lee. Y'all know the drill. Lee is going to give the prayer tonight. We don't make one move out of our tracks without saying the prayer. Go for it, Lee.
Oh, yes. Dear Lord, please help America and the world fight against this organized evil and deception. And please help us to expose it and to alert all the people and give us wisdom and discretion to see through all these evil deceptions and give us hope to be without hope, even though at times it seems hopeless. But with your help, we can do anything. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.
Thank you so much, Lee. Thank you so much, Lee. Now we're going to go to our great guest. So excited tonight. Monica, how are you doing? Have you been kind of doing extra prayers because this is the week of the 74th anniversary of the bombing of Dresden? But anyway, welcome to our show, Monica. We are so excited to have you here tonight.
Thank you so much. And yes, it is the anniversary of Dresden, and I have been praying, and I appreciate the prayer that Pastor Lee just spoke. It is just so relevant to all the things that we'll talk about today, and that we must never lose hope. That was what I took away from that. We must never lose hope, absolutely. And I do have a lot of hope. Just the very fact that they are so afraid of people like me, that gives me hope.
Well, you know, speaking of Lee, Lee and I, we have fought many a battle. We've shared scars. He's been with my side for years. We were both founding members of the Oath Keepers here in West Tennessee before they got infiltrated. He's in every political organization you can think of. I've bailed out of most of them because, as you know, most of them get infiltrated. But you know, where are we going to start tonight, Miss Monica? Well, we're going to start with Dresden. What would you like to? I got to say one more thing about you. I told Lee. This lady, well, I'm going to save this later. I don't give too much away. But I was telling him about how you could speak, and you gave a 4-hour summation at your trial. But anyway, I'm going to shut up. I'm so excited. I tend to get excited. But anyway, let's take off on. You want to start with Dresden? You want to start with something else with your trial in Germany? Which one?
I could just give the listener a quick overview of what I did to put me on the radar and, you know, what caused me to become arrested in the first place. Should I do that? Talk about the fact that I made this little short video 2.5 years ago called Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust. And that six-minute video changed my life. And many things happened after that, culminating in last year, 2018, spending most of that year, 10 months of it anyway, in a prison in Germany. And I do want to tie together to Dresden. And actually, since I've just given you a snapshot of what I want to give as by way of introducing the listeners to, you know, who am I, why you're even talking to me. My mother always talked about Dresden. Now, my parents came from Germany. Both parents came from Germany. They immigrated to Canada in the early 50s and raised a family here. And I was born and raised in Canada. But all through the years until she died, she always would say, why Dresden? Why Dresden? It was just filled with women and children and injured soldiers, refugees who were fleeing the Red Army, who were pushing them from the east. And it was filled to the brim with people. Nobody actually knows how many people were in that city. It was stuffed full of people. Every, you know, school and gymnasium was turned into a makeshift hospital. And the architecture in that city, it was just one of the most beautiful cities. It was, I think, called, you know, referred to the Venice of the North. It was a remarkable place. And in addition, many Germans just felt that they were safe there because there were no military targets, absolutely zero military targets. And then, yes, is it 74 years ago now?
74 years.
Yes, they were absolute firebombed. And it was hell. It became hell on earth. And I would say that was a Holocaust. That was a Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And when they talk about official numbers of 25,000, I just about have to throw up when I hear that, because that is a total lie and insult to anybody and everybody that suffered the consequences of that firebombing. And they, you know, nobody can know for sure how many, but estimates range anywhere from 250,000 to 600,000. And you know, something that Churchill said before that took place. He said, don't tell me how I can, you know, bomb military targets. Tell me how I can roast 600,000 refugees in Germany, like German refugees. We're talking German refugees. That's what he said. He wanted to roast. And this is exactly what happened. People were burned alive. It is just a horrible story of what happened there in Dresden. And, you know, they did it kind of like twice. Within 3 days, I think, was the main onslaught. They did a huge onslaught and created firestorm, and many, many, many people died. And then as survivors were feeling themselves safe to run...
Miss Monica, I hate to interrupt you. We have to go to a quick commercial break, and we're going to come right back to you, and we'll take up right where you left off. I don't want you to leave out one detail. I don't want you to leave out one match, one spark. If you're spellbound in your feet, seats like I am, don't worry. Miss Monica's going to be right back after this break. So hold on to your seats.
The runner on third takes a short lead. Elwood glances over. Now back to the plate. He sets the pitch. It's swung on strike three. They've won it. They have won it. World champions. Jim, what's it like down on the field?
John, it's a madhouse down here. I'm trying to get to Bob Elwood, the winning pitcher. Bob, how does it feel? Winning the seventh game on a strikeout.
Yeah, I thought he'd be looking for a slider, so I came on with my fastball.
World champions! Is this the greatest moment of your life?
Absolutely not. Jim, the best moments for me are breakfast with the kids. Long walks with my wife, just holding her hand, you know?
Marriage. You're never too far apart when you're still holding hands. From your neighbors, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Jim, when was the last time you held your wife's hand?
Well, it's been a while.
I tell you, you need to step up to the plate, Jim.
For more tips on strengthening your marriage, visit family.mormon.org.
I reinstated a policy first put in place by President Ronald Reagan, the Mexico City policy. I strongly supported the House of Representatives' pain-capable bill, which would end painful late-term abortions nationwide. And I call upon the Senate to pass this important law and send it to my desk for signing. We are protecting the sanctity of life and the family as the foundation of our society. And most importantly of all, it is the gift of life itself. That is why we march, that is why we pray, and that is why we declare that America's future will be filled with goodness, peace, joy, dignity, and life for every child of God.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
Well, people, we were right back, and we have, I can truthfully say, I've never had a guest that I was more excited, that didn't have anticipated more. And I'm going to shut up right now. I'm going to go right back to Miss Monica. Miss Monica, you were talking about going back right back to Dresden. You know, your mother was saying, why Dresden? You were talking about, how many refugees were there because they were fleeing the Russians coming from the east.
Exactly.
And, so go ahead, take up where you left off, Monica. I don't want to waste a single second of your time.
What I had just been explaining, that they did a big assault, then there was a pause, just enough pause to make the people think that now is their time to flee, those who survived, and also for the rescuers to come, you know, the ambulances, if you know, anybody in a position to try to rescue people and take the injured and care for them. Well, this was just underway, and the next assault came with more. And this, I mean, it was barbarous. It was absolutely meant to do maximum killing of women and children, the old, the very young, and people who had fled from the east, Germans who had fled from the east. So that is Dresden. That is the story of Dresden. And, you know, they do not even really allow Germans to mourn those victims, because every year there is in Dresden a commemoration, some kind of an event that is organized by people who would like to mourn and remember those losses, those terrible crimes against their kinfolk, their ancestors, and those are always being the Antifa show up and they scream and yell and make noises and try to disturb these things, and then, you know, there's police lines between them. They had this yesterday in Dresden, and I just watched a short video showing all these police lines. And of course, the people who have organized the actual event to mourn the dead and to remember Dresden, they are very well-mannered, calm, and peaceful. And it's the others on the outside of the police lines who are screaming and chanting and you know, Nazis away, like go away, this kind of thing. It's just, it's very, very sad because those people, many of them are simply victims of all this so-called, well, the re-education a la George Orwell that they have been subjected to for generations now, you know. So some of those people would be, would know what they're doing and they're actually, you know, sort of the enemy, I guess you could say. But many are people who are just simply thinking they are doing the right thing. They're making Germany, quote-unquote, good again, this kind of thing. They've been indoctrinated, like we've all been indoctrinated and brainwashed. And, you know, some of us have been able to peel those layers off and start to understand and see what really is going on. And that awakening, by the way, I think is taking an explosive, is going at an explosive rate, which it gives me hope. I mean, that's, but that is also why the enemy is really going crazy too at the same time. Yeah, so things are really escalating. But anyway, it is a good tie-in to the fact that it was my mother who, I will never forget, you know, over and over through the years. I mean, not every day, but, you know, she would always say over and over again, why Dresden? And it made her very sad and just, she could just never understand it. And, you know, she's been dead for many years now, and as has my father. They both died a number of years ago. But when I finally figured things out, and it started with my awakening to what happened on 9/11, and not even right during 9/11, but 10 years after 9/11, I started to wake up to that. And that was the door, the doorway through which I went to start to figure things out. And then I discovered that lying was not invented in 2001. And I started looking into World War II history. And my brother, Alfred, I want to bring him into the story.
Ms. Monica?
Point. Yes.
I would just like to, I just want to interrupt you briefly. I would like to go back and emphasize more strongly what happened in Dresden. And I'm going to tell the people, here's what, not to cut any.
Yes, please do.
Soul off money.
I would like that.
Okay, what
did.
Happened on February the 13th of 1945, the British, they sent 1,000 bombers into Dresden. Just like Miss Monica said, they knew, the Allies knew that Dresden was a wonderful university. They had a great university there. It was a culture center of all the world, second to none. It was full, like Miss Monica said, wounded soldiers, older ladies, children. They sent these 1,000 bombers in, calculated with percussion bombs, the first wave. The percussion bombs were designed to mainly blow the roofs off the houses, to dehouse the people, which you must remember, people, this winter of 1944-1945 was one of the coldest winters on record in Germany, in Eastern Europe, and even in Russia. Okay, then the second wave of bombers came in the next day, and they dropped these wonderful, kind incendiary bombs, 1,000 of them. They incinerated, listen, people, the fire was so hot. A lot of our listeners probably know this. The fire was so intense, it literally melted the asphalt streets, and asphalt ran like lava. The bombs went through the roofs, the incendiary bombs, and it just burnt everything. Well, the people thought we would go to the parks. Surely, God, they won't bomb the parks or the zoo. Some of the people retreated to the river, the Rhine River. And you once again, you're talking about, you know, 10 below zero, 15 below zero. They're trying to get away from the incendiary bombs. Well, guess what, folks? The kind, wonderful Allies, this good Christian boys, they went in and they bombed the parks with the civilians there. They bombed them. They even bombed the stinking zoo. They strafed the animals in the zoo. And guess what? Then after the second 1,000 wave of bombers, like Miss Schaefer said, the German people thought, oh, good, they're gone. So rescue forces came in, other mainly women and older men trying to escape. Well, they sent these real kind fighters in, and they machine gunned the people that were left that didn't get burnt alive. They machine gunned the survivors in the river. They machine gunned them on purpose, violating every international law there was. The rescuers went into the buildings down below, and they would find maybe a part of a shoe in these giant heaps of gunk, and they looked like oil or something. It was what was left of humans. They were burnt so bad, they were melted just like fat. And that's what the Allies did. They're wonderful allies, you know. Well, I'm sorry, Miss Monica.
Yeah.
I get wound up. I'm going to go back to where you was. I wanted to let these people know what your wonderful grandfathers did. Like my grandfather, thank God he went to the Pacific. That's what your wonderful heroes did. Oh, let's support our troops. Let's help them kill more civilians. Now, I'm going to shut up, Miss Monica. I'm going back to you. I'm sorry.
No,
I get so wound up.
No, thank you so much for providing those details. It is really horrifying. It's important, though, that people do hear these things because, you know, we've spent decades listening to the Hollywood version of events and how evil those Germans were and those gas chambers and ad nauseum, all these things. And, you know, that all turns out to be big lies. And then it's also that those big lies were concocted also to distract and deflect away from these actual horrors that were done against the Germans. But, you know, when you say that, okay, those were our grandparents that did that, or, you know, I think it's really, really important, though, to point out who was directing all this, who was behind this. And that would be the Jewish elite, the organized Jewish, the bankers. You know, this is who's directing things.
And absolutely, Miss Monica. Important. We have to go to a break. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No problem.
And yes, Prescott Bush. Prescott Bush, he did his share. You're absolutely right, Sam. People, we got to go to a break, and I'm going to go get a drink of cold water. We'll be right back.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Rick Vincent.
Democrats lining up to oppose the president's national emergency declaration to get money for a border wall. California Governor Gavin Newsom on MSNBC.
California is prepared to file a lawsuit. California is prepared to call this what this is, which is a theater of the absurd. California is prepared to continue to remind the American people this is a manufactured crisis. Border crossings up to 2017 were at the lowest level since 1971.
Former NYPD Lieutenant Joe Cardinale tells Fox News the response by the SWAT team in Aurora, Illinois to Friday's mass shooting was excellent.
For the families of the victims, it's just a sad, sad day. But once again, law enforcement shines in these moments, and this is how they handle it under the greatest stress you can imagine.
The gunman was able to kill five people and wound five police officers before being killed in an exchange of gunfire with law enforcement. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? I'm happy to inform you there's a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. There are no networks, so you decide your doctor and hospital. Liberty HealthShare allows you to easily decide how, when, and where you will access health care. Because our rights come from God, not government. It could be the best practical, moral, and economical choice for you and your family. It was for me. I joined. I'm a member. My children are members. Starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids for $449 per month. That's my cost, and I'm loving it. This is the way healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-58-LIBERTY. That's 855-58-LIBERTY. Or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com. And regain control over your healthcare costs. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
Pope Francis has removed former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick from being able to take part in formal church activities as a result of being found guilty for soliciting sex while hearing confession. John Allen, editor of a Roman Catholic-oriented news website and CNN's senior Vatican analyst in Rome, says the move comes at a key moment for the church.
Just a couple of days before a keenly anticipated summit of presidents of national bishops' conferences from all over the world is going to begin here in Rome to try to get on top of the clerical sexual abuse scandals.
A new report shows nearly half the calls made to cell phones this year will be spam. The study was conducted by First Orion and referenced in an FCC report this past week. A private jet with Jennifer Aniston, Courtney Cox, and other friends aboard was forced to make a dramatic emergency landing at Ontario International Airport Friday. The FAA confirms that the Gulfstream G4 with 10 passengers lost a wheel or tire while departing from LA International Airport on its way to Cabo San Lucas Friday. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Well, people, we are right back without further delay. I rubbed my mouth too much already. We're going to go back to the wonderful, the one and only Miss Monica Schaefer. Miss Monica Schaefer, would you like to go back to Dresden and cover that some more? What would you like to do?
Yes. I was just saying that, you know, it's important to realize who was behind the, you know, who was actually creating the agenda, who was pushing the agenda. And I was talking about organized Jewry. I mean, they have been, they fomented both World War One and World War Two, and there's so much documentation to back that up. And I'll just point out the current, you know, the state of Israel, their motto for their Mossad, by way of deception, thou shalt make war. Now, during World War One and Two, this current state of Israel did not yet exist. However, that was their modus operandi back then, too. So that, I think, is important to point out, you know, because people were deceived back then as well, and the soldiers were propagandized with all kinds of, you know, atrocity propaganda. It's atrocity propaganda, those evil German brutes, those the Huns, and all that was going on for decades. That was softening up the people's minds to think that they are really, truly, you know, now they're just going to take care of this brutish monster and then, you know, they can go home and sleep or whatever. You know, I think that is important to point out.
Miss Monica, you were so right. You know, I was just going to chime in. You're so right. You know, when Adolf Hitler came to power, and I'm sure I'm preaching to the preachers, in the 1930s, this Germany was just a mess. I mean, they were an absolute basket case for World War One. That the international Jewish bankers broke them, put strangling reparations on them they couldn't possibly pay. Well, you know, Berlin was a wreck. It was the, you know, the Sodom and Gomorrah of Europe. Precious women were trying to sell themselves to get enough bread to feed their children. Men were out of work. The unemployment rate was just out of sight. And Hitler came in and he changed that all around. And matter of fact, he was the man of the Time magazine man of the year once, if not twice. And you know, one thing he did that the Jews can never ever forgive him for, he kicked the Jewish bankers out. He nationalized the banks in Germany. He kicked them out. He started getting rid of a lot of the Jews in the civil service positions and making it an even playing field, and they hated him for that. And you're absolutely right. The same Jews that came in and tried to destroy Germany, they did the same thing to Russia. They turned it into the Soviet Union. They murdered millions and millions of Christians of the Soviet Union. Well, when, you know, but then you're absolutely right. You mentioned the country of Israel. Well, they all of a sudden in Russia, they started losing a lot of their zest and love affair with Bolshevism and communism. Churchill wrote a whole paper talking about this, that there was a struggle between the communist communism and Zionism, which way would the Jews go? And he had hoped they would go to Zionism, which they did, and they wreaked havoc on Germany. Well, you know, they turned totally against Germany during this time because they didn't care what kind of government the people had as long as they could run it. And they anyway, I'm going to shut up, Miss Monica. But you're absolutely right. You know, what's his name, Baron Baruch, Treasury Secretary, one of FDR's main advisors. He said, "Yes, we need to. Germany must perish." Matter of fact, there was a book written called "Germany Must Perish." But you're absolutely right. There is no doubt whatsoever. It's the Jews did it, and we have to name the enemy. That's who it was. And I'm shutting up. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I think it's great that you're giving really, really important and valuable information. And you know, the banks—that was the big crime of Hitler. You're absolutely right. That's what put him in the bad books big time. And just think more recently, Gaddafi, was that who? Yeah, Libya. You know, he also did that, and then he was demonized and compared to Hitler. And, you know, any country that seeks to do their own money system, well, they're suddenly in the bad books, and they must be destroyed by the Jewish bankers. So that was one of the things Hitler did, and then he built up the country, and Germany was doing very well, and it was like the miracle, you know, the economic miracle, and like you say, he was Man of the Year, Time magazine, and many, many world leaders praised him. I mean, it's just unbelievable when you think about how he has been made to be now the most evil man that ever walked the face of this earth in our psyche, at least according to mainstream, which, you know, we learn this from the day we're born, basically, from Hollywood, from the schools, from everything all around us in the mainstream makes Hitler be the baddest man on earth. I mean, you know, hardly a day goes by when you don't hear either Hitler or Nazi being mentioned as something evil, right? So, yeah, but when the world is upside down, everything is inverted, well, we can kind of figure out, you know, what that actually means. But shall I maybe connect this to what happened with my video, what it was about briefly, and why I was on the radar, and then going to Germany for a little visit, and then they snatched me right out of a courtroom where I was simply watching somebody else's trial, and another, you know, speech crime trial, and I'll go forward from that. Is that, does that sound good?
That will be perfect, and I'm going to make one more little comment. You know, the great, illustrious, a lot of people say he was great, the General George S. Patton, who was a friend of the Germans, and I'll make this brief. He once said, when they asked him, what was the difference between the Nazis, the Democrats, and the Republicans back here in home, he said, well, very, very little. You know, very little, except I would say that the Nazi Party was infinitely better than any party we have here right now, the Republicans or the Democrats. But go ahead. Go ahead right on. That's an excellent plan you have there, Ms. Monica.
Okay, yeah. And General Patton, I think probably most of your listeners realize he was murdered because he had basically come to the conclusion that, you know, they fought the wrong side or they fought the wrong enemy. Anyway, that's, another tragic story. But, okay, so in June of 2016, I made this little video, and I'm basically apologizing to my late mother and father, but mainly to Mom. Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust. Because when I was a youngster, learning about all these evils that the Germans were supposedly doing to the Jews, and gas chambers and shrunken heads and soap and lampshades and all those things, I went home from school and I was giving reproaches, like serious reproaches, to my mother. I said, hey, how come you didn't get together with your friends and relatives and stop, you know, you could have organized, you could have stopped this from happening. Like, I was just so affected by what I was learning in school. And so I kind of, you know, lashed out at my mom, and she was very quiet and contemplative and just said to me, Monica, we just didn't know. We didn't know those things were happening. We didn't know. And I explain this in the video, and then I say, now I know why she said she didn't know, because these things didn't happen. And then I go on to just very briefly, you know, talk about that there were work camps. Yes, of course, there were work camps. Nobody says there weren't. And but there were no gas chambers. And, you know, why would there be hospitals in these work camps if they were just planning to kill all these people anyway? And they had to basically keep the people strong and healthy to even do the work and all those things. Anyway, and then I recommend three other videos that people watch just as a starting point, you know, if they want to learn more. And I suggest that in this digital age, you know, the age of digital technology, we can all educate ourselves about it. Yeah, and so that video changed my life, because as soon as that was produced, my small town, hometown, 5,000 people population, they basically set out to try to destroy me. You know, this thing called ritual defamation, I kind of became an expert in that, not because I studied it at school, but because I experienced it. It's a process of shunning and ostracization and, you know, basically destroy your means of livelihood and try to take you down, put pressure on friends to abandon you. And many friends did abandon me, but then you kind of find out who your true friends are. And so that went on for a year and a half, but I didn't just cower and shrink away and run away. I stood my ground. I went around town very proud and tall and remained friendly to people and said hello and carried on with my life. I carried on, and I think they were surprised by that. But you know, when you know you have truth on your side, it's not so hard to stand tall. And actually, I can say that when that video went out into the world, I knew that I went through a door of sorts that never to go back. And it felt very liberating, I have to tell you. I mean, I knew it was serious. I kind of figured there would be some repercussions. I had no idea how big those repercussions would end up being. But it was liberating. It was liberating. And I sense that there's a break here again.
Yes, ma'am. We have a break. And I didn't want to interrupt you, but hold that thought. I will be right back. When we come back, Miss Monica, if we have enough time, you might want to mention what happened after the war with the starvation of the German prisoners in open fields and the starvation of the civilians. Anyway, we'll be right back, people, right after this break.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Kosher. Certified. Put the two words together to get co-certified, which is spelled with an S-E-H instead of just S-H. It's the right way to spell this, the German way, and it made it easier to trademark. Now, did I tell you that the letters S-C-H still make the shh sound, as in all those American food producers saying, shh, let's keep it really quiet that our product is kosher certified. Think about it. Nearly one century of kosher certification, and hardly anyone outside exclusive observers knows that most packaged food and kitchen products are literally certified by religious intermediaries. Well, because you, consumer, are indirectly paying for this, the Kosher Certified app is here to make kosher certification awareness an inclusive matter for people of all faiths and identities. And it even boasts a unique database of products not kosher certified. We call that NKC. Start memeing it. It's fun. NKC, not kosher certified. Now, to confuse our audience even more, we put a question mark at the end of our name, and that really cinched our trademark approval. It relates to the website where you can begin your new shopping behavior, thekosherquestion.com.
Well, people, we are right back now with the one and only Monica Schaefer. We have a couple of questions. What guests One guest called in, and he says he wanted to ask you about Alfred, and he also wants to know what got you locked up and so forth.
Yes, exactly. I wanted to move forward to that. And Alfred, my brother, who, you know, we did this journey of awakening and sort of a parallel journey. You know, this is with the awakening to 9/11 and then going from there, you know, and that we worked very much together. We would send each other information and links and whatnot. And he was living in Germany, and he's been living in Germany for a few decades now. He kind of reverse migrated. So he is currently in prison still and is serving 3 years, 2 months prison sentence. And he is still facing more charges. And he is facing more charges for things that he said in court. This is a very important point, and I wanted to, you know, talk about this, what it is like in a German court of law when you are there as a political prisoner, in other words, somebody who has simply spoken forbidden things, forbidden thoughts, forbidden words, and you are facing the Inquisition, and then when... Hello? Is that, are you still there?
Yes, ma'am. We're here.
Good. If you, I had a little clip on my end, but if you seek to defend yourself or reached your conclusions or bring forth evidence that would support your conclusions, well, you are suddenly doing new crime because they say you are saying these things in public in Germany and it is against the law to do so. Now, how bizarre is that, that even when you are trying to, well, you are supposedly in a courtroom which supposedly is serving a justice system, something that is supposed to seek evidence both sides, and then there, you know, judges make a ruling on whether you are guilty or not of some kind of a crime. But with a speech crime, you cannot actually defend yourself without committing new speech crime. And in fact, it goes a step further.
George Orwell would love that.
Oh, he's rolling in his grave. George Orwell is rolling in his grave. This is just absolutely horrendous. I mean, he tried to warn the world with his brilliant novel, 1984, and we are living it. And let me tell you, when I read that novel back in the 70s, when I was a teenager, let's say, I never would have dreamed that one day I would find myself in the middle of that novel as a character in that novel. It is so. It is just as bizarre, and, you know, we thought just that's a futuristic, you know, horror film or horror story. Never happened. Oh, well, we are in it. We are in it. Yes, so... okay, what led to my arrest? I went to Germany for Christmas 2017 just to visit my brother, have a little visit. I only was intending to go for 1 month. I was supposed to fly home January 15th of 2018. Now, we wanted to go see the trial of Sylvia Stolz. Oh, yes, and this is what I was just about to say, that not only can you not explain how you reached your conclusions in the court of law and without incurring or, you know, doing new crime, you cannot even describe that situation without doing crime, because that is what Sylvia Stolz was on trial for, a speech that she had given in 2012 in Switzerland, not even in Germany, but in Switzerland at an anti-censorship coalition, like a gathering. And that speech is online. It's available. I would encourage people to look it up. It's excellent, very powerful. And she was simply describing this legal situation. Now, just to explain, she was the lawyer. She was the one of Ernst Zundel's attorneys in his trial in, I believe it was 2005, in Germany, after which the judge threw him in jail for 5 years, the maximum for that Section 130, that's the law that we broke. And yes, she was charged with that speech. And in the speech, she doesn't deny the Holocaust. She doesn't talk really about what happened in history or didn't happen in history. She simply was describing the justice system in Germany. She was describing what happened when she was actually carried physically out of the courtroom, when she was defending Ernst Zundel, because she was providing evidence and saying things that she was not allowed to say, and the judge had tried to stop her from saying these things, and she said it was her obligation to do her duty as for her client to defend him, and they again tried to warn her, stop her, and the guards came to tell her, please leave, and she said, well, I'm not leaving, I'm still doing my duty as a defender of my client here, and they told her again, and she said, you'll have to carry me out, and that is exactly what they did, and she's a very peaceful, actually quite a small woman, and they carried her right out of the courtroom, and at that time she served 3 years, 3 months prison time simply for doing her job as a lawyer. That is where we are at in Germany. Did you want to jump in or shall I continue?
I heard she was a regular fireball. I know I keep probably going back to the war, but I'd just like to make one more comment, Miss Monica, about after the war, after the German war. And people need to know this, just how wonderful us Americans are and our allies. After the war, you know, and by the way, he's talking about the Holocaust. The Allies never even mentioned the Holocaust until after the Germans surrendered. Because if the Germans had not have surrendered, as long as the war was going on, they could not say, oh, they got a massive Holocaust over here, because, you know, the International Red Cross had made repeated visits over there, and it was a crock. But anyway, they need to know what we did. There was over 1 million German soldiers who laid their weapons down, just like, you know, the laws of war, if you want say the laws of war, this is kind of an oxymoron, but by the Geneva Convention, they were supposed to be housed and fed, taken care of, you know, medicine. But no, that wonderful American General Eisenhower, the Jew Eisenhower, he had these German prisoners, all million of a plus of them, out along the Rhine River, just open barbed wire fields. There was no medicine, there was no toilets, there was no water. When people would try to throw food over to them, they would be threatened with being shot. Some of them were shot. And they even, you know, the international community sent food over there. But the wonderful Eisenhower and the Allied High Command stocked the food in warehouses, would not let the German army or the German people be fed. There was millions of German civilians starved to death. Only till Herbert Hoover came out and raised holy hell about it and protested that the food finally started getting released. But I just want people to know that. That's what your wonderful allies did to disarm the public and disarm civilians. And I'm going to shut up with that. I didn't want anything to get left out.
Yes, this is extremely important. They were renamed. They were no longer called prisoners of war, which they actually were. And then, like you mentioned, there are some, you know, conventions. And it is sort of oxymoron, you know, rules and this kind of thing. But there were these conventions how prisoners of war are to be treated. They were renamed disarmed enemy combatants so that they could basically do away with any so-called rules. And these Eisenhower death camps. Now, I will tell you an interesting little added fact about this story. My father was in one of those camps, in the Rhine Meadows camps, and he, one time when we were in Germany in about, I think it was about 2006 or so, and we were visiting a cousin, this is in Bad Kreuznach, and we were in a car, and he's pointing to a field, and he says, there, this is where we were, this is the field, and now this field is growing, I think, corn or something, I don't remember exactly, but it was just a farmer's field now, he says, this is where we were, and you know, he didn't talk about this experience very often, but occasionally he did. And he says that when healthy, strong young men were brought in, and within a matter of days they were so weak, they were basically crawling and they would die. And he says between a quarter and a third of the people died. They would dig their holes in the ground to get out of the elements, the cold. They would use just the spoons that they had to dig into the ground a little bit. I mean, and I'll tell you how my father survived. He actually was helped out by a guard who, I guess, took a liking to Dad, and he escaped. I mean, this sounds surreal, and I almost think people are not going to believe it, but this is true. He escaped in this guard's, the trunk of his car. Like, this guard took a liking to my dad for some reason. I'm not sure you know, what kind of interactions they had, but he actually was helped out. He escaped. And the other thing that kept my dad a little bit stronger than some of the others, you know, they would get, I think, a ration of maybe a few cigarettes a day, maybe one or two or five, I don't know. But my dad was not a smoker. But for smokers, those cigarettes were even more important than the few calories they were getting. So he did trade some cigarettes for food. But the calories that they were allotted was so low that people were just starving. And I hear the music. I think we're going into
Miss Monica,
break.
Yes, we have to go to a break.
We'll
bring you back on the second hour. We have this is going to be a little longer break than usual because transitioning between the first and second hour. People, please don't go anywhere. This is an absolutely spellbinding interview with Miss Monica. She's one of a kind. I praise God she's here with us tonight. So we'll see you right back after the break, people. Bye-bye.